Hello, and welcome to the latest episode from Tech Salescraft. Our mission is simple. We want to bring you exclusive insight from some of the brightest and most influential minds from the tech sales scene. We want this podcast to be your weekly go-to for inspiration. And if this is your first time listening to the show, please subscribe to keep up to date with all the latest releases.
Mark, welcome to the show, and thank you very much for taking time out in your day to talk to us. In a way of getting started, because you do so much, and you're probably the best person to explain exactly who you are and what you do.
Cheers, James. Look, really happy to be here as well. So thank you for inviting me on. Yeah, I think I get asked quite often, how do I do so much? And I was joking with you before about I don't have children and like lots of other responsibilities. So I just tend to focus on a few things, but just to give some context, I run a small portfolio of businesses, and my main focus is Speak On Podcast, which helps B2B brands speak on the podcast what their ideal customers are already listening to. And then I run a few other businesses. One's the Product Onboarders, which is all about B2B SaaS onboarding. And then, as you know, I coach on the Sales Impact Academy, the outbound prospecting course as well. So taking those brand new SDRs from the first month through to 6 months and just giving them an overview of the course, and then just applying a lot of my knowledge from running hundreds of outbound prospecting campaigns in the past and just kind of distilling that in a very digestible way. So I think that's the 45-second intro.
From the work you've been doing, you've been able to get a lot of experience talking to different leaders in different types of organizations. And what I wanted this podcast to be all about is passing information on to founders at kind of seed level and chief revenue officers, head of sales, everything around that revenue world about high performance and how to basically get from where you are if you're at seed to probably Series A funding. From your world, and what you look at, how does a founder get to high performance?
Yeah, well, I can talk specifically about sales and getting to high performance with sales. I think a lot of the SaaS, so I've mainly worked in B2B SaaS companies, typically pre-Series A, or helping them just after that Series A. When it comes to selling at this stage, the ones that I've seen the most success with, they've actually sold to people outside of their network. So not just their friends and family and their network, they've sold to almost cold prospects. And then they've started to build the initial process and function of a sales team. Now that might be all in their head. They haven't actually written it down, but they do have a workflow that they go through. And I think really having that foundation of that sales process is key for to experience high performance when it comes to sales. I actually see a lot of founders who have sold to just their friends and family. They believe that their product is good enough to sell. And then they hire in like an SDR, for example, to come in and do a lot of outbound. But the messaging isn't refined. The process isn't in place. And oftentimes that first sales rep, sales hire, which might be a sales development rep, isn't the person to build that playbook out as well. Yeah. So really just having that understanding of the messaging and the product market fit for people outside of your network, because you're always going to get friendly advice and nice words said about you when you're speaking to your mate.
So just to really arrow in on that, in your mind, what's the importance of selling to outside your network? And as a founder, that you're more likely to have not done selling before. Mm-hmm. How do they do that? Because it's easy to go to the comfortable bit of, I'm just going to go and just check with so-and-so. But so what's the importance of doing this and how do you do it?
Yeah. Okay. So a big question to unpack quite in as briefly as I can. The way I look at sales, there's a couple of things that I think about when it comes to selling. The first thing is you're just having conversations with people. You're not actually selling something. So have the mindset of, you know, you want to speak to people, find out if they have challenges or problems that your product or service that you're building can solve. Yeah. The second thing to remember, and this is what some founders struggle with, is from an ego point of view, is you're not the hero.
Yeah.
And in fact, the people that you're speaking to do not care about your technology. They don't care how many hours you've spent hand writing code for the code base. They just want to solve a problem. So to remember that you're not the hero, they're the hero. Yeah. And you're a guide in their journey. And then I guess the third thing to remember is that people buy for two reasons, either to gain pleasure or to avoid gain or loss.
Yeah.
So to wrap all these things up, and where do you get started? What you want to do as a founder is speak to people that you believe have the problem that your solution can help them overcome. The reason why you want to speak to people outside of your own network is, again, to that point of your friends will be nice to you. Your network will be nice to you. Only when you go after somebody who's, let's just say, completely cold, they've never heard from you before, and you ask them questions about their problems, about their challenges, will you be able to start really understanding the patterns and seeing the trends between those conversations.
Which I think absolutely makes perfect sense. When I speak to a lot of the VCs, when they get to Series A funding, the businesses that have got a well-oiled sales team already in place, which has got a repeatable, scalable process, which isn't the founders, they're in the best position once they hit Series A to get a better valuation and also stand a better chance of getting to Series B quickly. So that makes a lot of sense. So when the founders, they've got their product, they kind of think it's ready to go. They've spoken to their network, but now we're looking at to go outside of their network. What would you be looking to do? Because particularly in today's world, marketing becomes really, really key. Do you advise that they then get people in to look about marketing? Because once you talk about marketing, you can make a big noise, or is that too early at this stage?
I think it might be a bit too early, because you still want to validate whether this is a viable solution that people are willing to pay for. It could be an expensive exercise to bring in a marketer to tell you that in 6 months' time that actually people don't want to pay for this and it's not a big enough problem to solve.
Yeah.
I think as well, from my experience, a lot of the founders I've spoke to, they started off scratching their own itch. And whilst it was a really big problem for them, actually a spreadsheet is a better alternative to solve it, because just because you're technically minded and you can see the solution doesn't mean that that's a need that people have. So yeah, so definitely getting out there and speaking to people and understanding who are those ideal customers for you. I think a lot of founders and even established sales teams forget to refocus on their buyer personas and their ideal customer profiles. One of the quickest ways that I recommend early stage founders to start thinking about where their customers are is to try and think in of affinity groups. It's not a term that you'll find much about. It actually comes from an insurance background, but an affinity group is a group of people that have a shared common interest or goal. So if I was selling a cold email software, I would think, well, who needs this and where do they spend time online? So they might be looking at the Sales Hacker blog. They might be listening to certain podcasts. They might be involved in different Slack communities. So if I had a new product that I wanted to see whether people were interested in, I would think of the affinity and go after them. The second point I just want to add in real quickly is also to think about what's happening in my prospects' world, or what's happening in my ideal customer's world before they need my solution. And then try and find people who are experiencing those challenges or those problems as well.
Is this a time critical process to roll through? Should they be looking to get through that quickly and onto the next stage, or is it just work through it and when it's done, it's done?
Yeah, I think there's getting started is always the hardest bit and the one that was going to take the most work. And I think it's Paul Graham of Y Combinator that talks about doing things that don't scale. Get completely comfortable. Again, as a technical co-founder, I'm speaking more to the technical founder, you want to build the logic, you want to build the automation, but these things can't be scaled. I'm working with a company at the moment, they've got 14,000 users on their platform, albeit a lot of them on a freemium model. And we're working through a process called Jobs to be Done. Done is finding out really what is the actual goal of people, what is the goal of people when they're using your product, what are they actually trying to achieve. Again, it's not that they're looking for the most sophisticated AI technology with machine learning and all this automation. That's not it. They're trying to solve something. So just to give an example with this, with this particular company, they're doing a lot of jobs to be done interviews right now. Let's say it's around 60 interviews. But on an ongoing basis, they're only going to do a few each month. But that bulk bit of the work is the heavy lifting. But once it's done, you can then just continue working on it, but on a small basis, just to make sure that you're fine-tuning your message.
So once this has happened and the founders have managed to get people to buy the product that is outside of their network, when do they know that they are ready to bring people in to take over some of the sales and marketing, and where do you go first?
Yeah, that's a really tricky question to answer, because every business is nuanced. So you want to be thinking about what's your average sales price, because that's going to determine what type of person you need to hire first. So I can give some sort of characteristics of what a sales price should be and what you should be looking for. Would that be helpful, James?
100%, yes.
Okay, so if you've got an average sales price of, let's say, 5K per year, then inbound and an inbound approach might be better. So heavy on the organic and maybe paid sponsorships as well might be worthwhile. Fully loaded account executive is just not going to, the unit economics won't work. 5 to 10K, you might have an inbound sales development rep, but you need to be generating demand for that as well. So your marketing has to be good. If you're looking at the 20 to 50K, you can get away with like a good B2B inbound lead gen or demand marketer, but not having an outbound motion. But if you're 50K plus, that's probably where you want to put in outbound sales and have a very sales-led approach to your product. Again, though, if you're free trial, then if you have a free trial sign up, then it's very different if you don't have a free trial sign up. So it's a really hard question to answer, but your average sales price is probably one of the things you need to think about. The second thing is your total addressable market. If you're only selling to potentially 500 people, then yes, having a dedicated salesperson to go and build those relationships is going to be worth it. If you're selling to 5 million people as a total addressable market, then you want to rely heavily on marketing to generate that demand. And the last thing as well is the sales cycle. How long has it taken you to close those deals? And that's another reason why it's important to sell outside of your network, because your friends will close a deal real quick because they want to help you out. When you work with somebody who's completely cold to begin with, you'll then start to understand how long it took. Oh, they asked for contracts. They asked for due diligence. You have to be ISO certified. Those are the things that you will start to realize when you're not selling to your friends.
Here's another really big question that probably has a multiple of different answers. But if you're selling to businesses where you're looking at somewhere around that 5,000 a year, and in some instances lower, you normally have a product that can go into many, many, many different types of businesses. Mm-hmm. At that level there, would you see there that you should expect them to have some sort of free sign up or free trial? And then is it more a customer success person that you want than a hunting BD executive? Because that seems to me that somebody that's going to need more touch points, you want them to get using it. And, once they've signed up, which is kind of a different person to the sales. So
yeah.
Would you suggest that anybody that's looking around about that 5,000 to be looking at customer success over sales and a really good marketing function? Because obviously you need them to be landing and looking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a really great question. I think the first and the most important thing you need to have is a good product. Yeah. I think that is another thing that is often overlooked. The founder has built something, but is it great? Can people use it? If you're less than $5,000 per year, let's say, your product needs to sell itself. It also needs to allow that self-service of people signing up, getting to use it, experiencing the value, reaching those aha moments. And that's a lot what we cover in the product on borders. So I guess we could talk about that in a whole other episode. But yes, customer success potentially would be more important there, because it's much cheaper to retain your customers than it is to keep acquiring new ones. I've seen a lot of Series A companies, for example, they get the VC funding, they go after top of the funnel, but they have a leaky bucket throughout the whole process, and they're just not optimized for retention. Another thing to consider when it comes to that as well is that you as the founder might want to be the person that if a big a well-known company signs up, then you get involved. It might not be worth hiring somebody at the time, but you have that conversation with the company, see what the expansion opportunities are within that product. And the last thing I want to say about the whole thing when it comes to that product-led approach to it is that your onboarding has to be good. It has to do the job that several people can do. It's really important that you get it right, because bad onboarding leads to lots of people just never coming back to your product.
And are you seeing more and more people going down this route, or are you still seeing founders thinking, actually, I need an SDR, I need a account executives just to hammer the phones and get people to see the product?
Yeah, so there's two trends I'm seeing recently. One is that there's this argument now that product-led growth is a term that is getting more popular and gaining traction, and I think it's fantastic. But people are looking at it as like product-led versus sales-led.
Yeah.
And I think they can complement each other. And I actually think that if you're selling a product which is $70 per month,
yeah,
but there's upsell and expansion opportunity, then yes, start the experience with a product-led approach, but you're probably going to need a salesperson, because if it's $70 per seat, but there's 300 seats that people want to use,
yeah,
no one's going to put in a credit card without speaking to somebody when it's going to be 300 times 70. So that's the first one. And I think they complement each other. But what I think every business can do is look at product-led growth companies, and, you know, the famous ones are like Slack, for example, and see how you can improve your experience to make it feel more, more product-led and self-service. The other thing that I think is a little bit, this might be a bit controversial, but sometimes when you receive funding, you have particular targets that you're set to hit, and those targets can be very short-term. You have to hit X amount of revenue. Now, one of the biggest mistakes that founders make when they plan their sales targets and revenue, they hire a sales rep and they'll just basically look at the yearly quota and divide that by 12.
Yeah.
But a brand new sales rep isn't going to be at full quota at month one.
No.
They're probably not month two. Month three, they probably will be.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the sales structure or the playbook or the processes in place, then it's going to be even longer.
Yeah.
So I think there's a little bit of a lack of understanding of how you ramp up a salesperson. There's plenty of smart people out there, but as an SDR, they're great at picking up the phone, following processes, making dials, smiling, sending emails. Yeah. But they need to have those instructions.
Yeah.
You can find people that can do both, but they're not going to hit the quota that they would if it was just purely following the process and the repeatable, scalable sales process.
The difference between when you mentioned there about when you've got one or two seats in an organization, that there could be 300, whose responsibility would you say to do that? Is that the role of the customer success, or would you put an account executive in to do that?
Yeah, I think it depends on how commercial the individual is. So if somebody's in the customer success role and they're very much a support and nurturing individual, because that's the kind of personality that you want, then they may not be looking for those commercial opportunities and perhaps aren't the best person to start having that conversation. And actually, that would be very uncomfortable for them to have that conversation.
Yeah.
But what you can do, if you've got somebody who's great at support, really good at nurturing and building relationships with the customers, they can look for these signals. They can listen out for those cues in the conversations and then pass that on to you as the founder. Now, if you're very early stage, it will be the founder that does that.
Yeah.
What you might want to then start thinking about is, do you have an account manager? So if your approach is to land and expand, then having an account manager who can ultimately look in and jump into the conversation and say, hey, we can see that you're using the product, your three team members are getting value from it.
Yeah.
What are the opportunities for other teams to use it? What are the opportunities for other people within your department to use it as well?
Yeah.
But I think it's, I've been there as founding the business myself, or a couple of businesses, we just expect everybody to be able to do everything. When that person isn't naturally inclined to be salesy, or they feel uncomfortable, don't force them to do it, because it's the quickest way to drive somebody out of a role when you're asking them things they don't feel comfortable with. And if you're hiring the right customer success person to be caring for the customers, then selling to a customer isn't always going to align with their values. So just be aware of that.
So I guess that comes down to when you decide the process that you want to go down, you have to really understand the outcomes of the role that you want the person to come in, and then you go and look for that person. So if you need that person to do some extra selling, then it's the person who's got that commercial astute about it. If it's just to make sure that they don't go anywhere else and to wrap them up, it's that caring, nurturing person. To jump to the other end of the scale, where you're looking at the 20 to 50,000 plus a year, what comes first in that, an SDR or an account executive, or do you get an account executive and outsource your SDR programs?
Yep, so really good question. So I think what comes first is the strategy and the process. You need to have an understanding of who your ideal customer profile is. You need to understand what makes a good customer, what makes a bad customer. Now, typically a sales development rep won't be the person to do that. Not to say that a sales development rep can't work that out. Anybody, I believe, can work something out.
Yeah.
But you're better off bringing in maybe like a fractional VP of sales just to come in and go, here's the playbook. Here's what works. This has worked in the several other companies I've worked with. Here's the playbook that you need to follow. And then once you have that playbook, then you're ready to hire an SDR to just do the pure grunt work and legwork it requires to make the calls, send the emails, book the demos.
Okay. So just to explain to me, what's a fractional, was it a fractional VP of sales?
Yeah. So a fractional VP of sales is typically somebody who's worked as a VP of sales in a company before. However, now they help multiple companies.
Yeah.
Because in the early stages, you don't necessarily need a full-time VP of sales, and they're expensive. They're good at what they do.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of people out there that are available for on a day rate of 1 or 2 days a week, maybe even less.
Yeah.
Typically, you'll need them more at the beginning, and then after, they're just kind of overseeing and optimizing it.
Yeah.
They have the experience. They know what works. They've got the playbooks, which they can literally just pick up and put into your company, obviously with the context of the business and market you're serving.
A fractional VP of sales or a fractional CRO? And do you believe they're different?
I do believe they're different. So I believe for a pre-Series A company, I don't know whether there's enough data and enough people to do the execution of the roles for a chief revenue officer to be there.
Yeah.
Because if you haven't got a marketing person, if you haven't got a salesperson, then the chief revenue officer is going to be the one that's doing the doing.
Yeah.
Now, there are two types of CROs. They're the ones that can do the execution and the ones that can set the strategy and manage and build the team. Depending on where you're at is where you need. I think if you haven't got the marketing function, you're building the product yourself, so you don't even have a product team, and you don't have a customer success team, then that CRO is really just going to be focusing on sales effectively.
Yeah.
So I believe at a very early stage, and your go-to-market strategy is sales-led, VP of sales would probably be the best start forward. That's just my opinion, though.
Yeah, because I guess it's the role of which they're going to be doing, but would you expect the fractional VP of sales to actually do some selling? Because that's difficult to do in a part-time role.
Yeah, probably not, to be honest. That fractional VP of sales comes in and kind of sets up everything ready to go. At the same time, you'll be likely bringing on a sales development rep who needs those instructions, need those processes to follow.
Yeah.
And really, to begin with, you as the founder might be doing the closing.
Yeah.
You'll be the one doing the closing until it gets to the point where you can't do that anymore. And that's where potentially you need to find an account executive. But again, it depends on your total addressable market. If you've got a small market and a long sales cycle, then having that high volume SDR isn't going to be the right fit for you and your go-to-market strategy.
I love the idea of fractional VP or CRO. I think it's knowing if it's a CRO, it's knowing that they're doing a VP job, because they would have done a VP job at some stage. But having that experience of going through a growth organization and having some relative success from it. From your knowledge and experience, from probably talking to more founders than I have, would you highly recommend a fractional VP of sales to every founder that is probably not from a sales background?
I don't think there's a one size fits all answer. Again, it depends on the average sales, but I don't think it necessarily matters about the founder, because you could be a sales you could have a sales background, but you're too busy building the product. You're too busy fixing bugs. You're too busy managing a development team. So it all depends on, having a knowledge of a sales obviously puts you as an advantage when you've got a sales-led approach. But I don't think the personality or the background of the founder really should define what that next hire is. Really, you should look at the gaps of what you can do. So I'll give you an example for me, James. I've got a sales background. I'm not doing sales in my business because I'm leaning on my other skills of customer success and processes to build out. And I have a co-founder that's doing the sales. So I just can't answer that question in with one sentence.
No worries. Well, look, I've really enjoyed this conversation with you, and I've really learned a lot. Before I let you go, If you were talking to a group of founders right now who are at pre-seed funding, what three key bits of advice would you give to them about the commercial, the revenue generating side of the business?
Yeah. So I would say number one is think about your ideal customer profiles and test your assumptions. I've spoken to quite a lot of founders that said, well, anybody could use our product. Anybody can use it. And yeah. I'm like, my 67-year-old aunt is anybody and she wouldn't use your product. So who specifically will use your product? In line with that, when it comes to your ideal customer profiles, it's okay to think vertically. So you might actually start with marketing people. Yeah. Or you might start with industries, or you might start with departments. One thing that I think a lot of founders do is that they work on their ideal customer profiles and buyer personas, and then they think they have to stick to it. It can change in 6 months.
Yeah.
You just want to like kind of land and expand. A really good book is Crossing the Chasm by Geoffrey Moore. We can maybe put a link to that in the show notes. Very, very good for looking at software sales. So understand your ideal customer profiles, first of all. The second thing is build a good product. There are so many products that I use, and the product on board is we've reviewed over 50 B2B SaaS companies. While some of them look really nice, they just don't work very well. They're actually taking me more time to set up than I'm actually hoping to save. And oftentimes, your biggest competitor as a SaaS company is inertia and people just continuing to do the same thing that they're currently doing right now. The last bit of advice, it goes back to the very first thing I said, is you need, as a founder, need to sell the first 10 customers outside of your network. I'm just saying 10 as a magic number there. Why you're investing your time in that is you're actually hearing what people are saying about their challenges and the problems that they're looking to solve.
Yeah.
Because you might look at your website and you say, meet the world's first intelligent meeting platform. I don't want the world's first intelligent meeting platform. I want to close more demos.
Yeah.
And you'll hear that from when you have the conversation. Yeah. So what Paul Graham said about doing things that don't scale, really, really important, especially in the early stages.
I think there are three really valuable points, and particularly that selling to outside your network, I think is really, really critical for people to understand where their business is at and how were you starting to look at the playbook. And because, you know, your network may like it, and they probably will if you've done your due diligence, but it's working out how you get in front of people that have no idea who you are and how you sell to their problem. So I think that's really, really critical. And the last bit, just to put you on the spot for the last time, is there a bit of tech that a SaaS sales team should, that you've seen that they can't live without, that every tech team should have?
Oh, now you're digging into my past, because I used to be a MarTech and sales tech consultant. A CRM, I think, you know, if I'm thinking about the early stage founder, have a CRM. HubSpot does a great job for the majority of sales processes. If you've got a very complex sales process with contracts and other things as well, you might need to look at Salesforce. Mm-hmm. HubSpot is a great free CRM. One of the things I always say, though, James, is I often speak to founders and I use a running analogy. They want to be running a triathlon, but they haven't even got off the couch and done a 5K.
Yeah.
You know, the first thing you need to do is get that couch to 5K out of the way.
Yeah.
And that could be a spreadsheet. It could be HubSpot CRM. But yeah, have a CRM, be diligent and be detailed and log everything in there. It will pay you back in dividends in the future.
Perfect. Mark, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed chatting to you, and I'm absolutely certain that the listeners will take a lot away from this. So thank you very much.
Cheers, James. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Please click subscribe, like, leave a comment, and turn on your notifications. We'd really love you to be involved with the Tech Salescraft and being part of the growing community. Thank you for being part of our journey.